From Tribune Tower, WGN Radio presents a conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything within the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this week's edition of the Sunday Spin for September 4th, 2016, the first Sunday in September and the Sunday of Labor Day holiday weekend. Hope you're having a good holiday as we bring you up to date on all things political. It's time to grab that Sunday paper, get that cup of coffee, and we'll do our best to keep the holiday weekend going strong. Well, guys, happy Labor Day to you both.
Happy Labor Day. Couldn't ask for better weather.
That flew by, didn't it? Summer's gone.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Oh, it's gone.
No.
Come on. It's gone, Swanee.
Dave, you've got the temperatures for the week ahead, and
yes, I do.
We've got 90s coming.
I know, yeah. So it's summer is not over yet, and summer usually officially ends around calendar wise around the 21st of the month. So we're still into summer as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I think I saw 3 days, either high 80s, low 90s, and humid.
Yeah.
So don't despair. Don't give up on it yet. Although I have to tell you, something about yesterday, I mean, just the perfect day.
Oh.
Absolutely the perfect day. But it felt, it did feel a tad like fall.
Yeah, right. When you have cooler air, but the sun is still warm. And you're walking in sunshine and the air is cooler. That's
and
a neat feeling.
And football's on TV.
Right. That's right.
That's why it feels like fall, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you could watch football yesterday. The first game started at 7 in the morning. It was in Ireland. And I promise you, Rick, the last game ended. It was Wyoming and Northern Illinois. It ended at 2:15 in the morning.
Yeah, but well,
three overtimes, was it?
No, it was just a kickoff on the West Coast in the mountains in Wyoming.
Yeah, but there were some
delays there also.
Yeah, there was. I believe
maybe weather?
There was. Yes, there was a lightning
okay.
delay and three overtimes. I'm sorry I didn't make it. Actually, that would have been a kick getting up and waking up to a football game. You know, this morning at 3 o'clock this morning, I did watch. The LSU Wisconsin game from Lambeau, and wore an LSU shirt in honor of all the folks in Baton Rouge going through that flood devastation down there, and but it was a pretty sad LSU game, I have to tell you. I mean, both their touchdowns, they lost 14-13, I believe.
16-14. Wisconsin was up 13-0 and almost blew it.
Right, and they almost blew it in a matter of like 65 seconds. Two turnovers that led to two quick touchdowns put Wisconsin behind, and they ended up winning with a field goal. You think of LSU and you think of the SEC and you think of a lot of offense, a lot of passing, and it just wasn't there for LSU at all. But, boy, there were some blowouts yesterday, too. I mean, the typical kind. I mean, Illinois winning big. Nice win for Lovie Smith down
now,
there.
Where did you go to undergrad, Rick?
I went to SIU Carbondale, the Salukis. I went there for a year. And then I went to SIU Edwardsville, where their football was in the form of a round ball that you can't touch with your hands unless you're the goalie.
Okay.
But, I love college football season.
Well, Swanee's Cardinals got the win. Ball State, 31-21. They got it done.
Thank you. I wasn't aware of what they did yet. Thanks.
That's a bad alum right there.
What channel was that game on?
That was on ESPN 10.
ESPN 10. Well, and speaking of cable, by the way, I guess there's some good news to report that Tribune Media and Dish Network.
Dish came to an agreement?
Yes, they did.
Finally, that is good news.
Since I think that was out of the system since mid-June. And the timing, of course, couldn't be better. And I guess some of the concern was that in some of the Tribune Media markets where the Tribune owns Fox affiliates, football, NFL Sunday kind of put some pressure.
Was blanked out also. Yeah.
So like in Indianapolis, I guess there were some real concerns there as well. So, but that at least is good news. And now, of course, with the run of the Cubs here, this is just, I mean, sure. And that was a great ball game, by the way, yesterday, despite the loss. I mean, that was just, you couldn't ask for a better pitcher's matchup and a better day to be out at the ballpark than yesterday.
Yeah, Joe Maddon, did you catch what he said? He said that he'll take that effort no matter what the result is. He'll take that every day of the week. The Cubs lose by a run, 3-2. It was late. It was close. And you had a great pitching matchup between two aces, Bumgarner and Arrieta.
And I think he said it was kind of a playoff-type atmosphere out there, too, which, you know, nothing hurts about getting some practice for that as well.
Did you get nervous, though? Rizzo gets thrown out at second. He was at first.
I didn't like him overrunning second base.
Because those are the mistakes in October that make you nervous.
Exactly. And it's not like it shouldn't be like a youthful exuberance type of mistake. I mean, he should know better. And yeah, that was just because you could kind of, that was ninth inning. And you kind of could see maybe some momentum going when Rizzo got on with a walk.
Yeah, he overran the base at second. He headed toward third and then slipped, tried to run back, and by the time they threw to second, he had – it was like that scene in Major League when,
yes,
when Willie Mays Hayes tries to slide back, but he's, you know, like 6 feet short.
Right.
The guy's like, come on, come on.
Yeah, it was like, yeah, just keep walking to me here. Yeah, it was a frustrating way to end the game, but nevertheless, magic number is down to 12. I guess we owe the Cincinnati Reds a thank you for beating the Cardinals. And I was talking to Dave earlier about if you look at the – and I'm not trying to get ahead of things here. Please don't assume that. The seventh game of the World Series would be played 1 week before Election Day.
And you're not getting ahead of yourself?
I'm just thinking that, you know, who would be paying attention to politics?
You?
Of course, I have to. But
rhetorical.
But, I mean, it's – that's all I'm going to say, all right? And as I said earlier, I'm not petting the goat. I'm not doing any of that kind of stuff. And
are you going to be in the goat? the restaurant, the bar.
Yeah,
that
thank
is.
You.
Yes.
Thank you very much. I would not expect to be consumed by a goat. I don't know where, I don't know what farm you grew up on, Shawnee. But so we've got college football and big game tonight. Notre Dame is playing tonight.
Yeah, at Texas. That game is in Austin. It's an 8 o'clock kick, I believe.
I'm not sure what the time is, but
it's a night game. It's under the lights.
Yeah, that should be a lot of fun. And then, of course, next weekend is the start of the NFL season. And the Bears. Can I hear the crickets?
It's actually a 6:30 kick between ND and Texas. I correct myself.
Ah, okay, 6:30. But, yeah, I'm kind of, I don't, as I said before, I'm not sure what to think of the Bears. Although Kyle Long with the new contract here, which that's, I think, is a good investment on their behalf. But, it's still, I think, I'm afraid, going to be a long, long NFL season. Well, Dave's here to keep us up on all the news. Sam, of course, has the latest sports. Producer Jasmine is back with us, and we've truly missed her, but she knows that we've been with her while she's been away. Jasmine is here to field your phone calls at 312-981-7200. That's also our text number, 312-981-7200. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin. We're on Twitter at @SundaySpin. And engineer Bob is joining me here in the Allstate Showcase studio. He's trying out different barbecue sauces for the Labor Day cookout here as he mans the board. You can find all of our shows on WGNRadio.com. You can also find our podcast, too, at iTunes by searching for Rick Pearson. Well, coming up, we've got another great show today. After Dave's 7:30 news update, we'll be speaking to Charlie Carey. He's the president of the Chicagoland Sports Hall of Fame, and to Gene Lenti-Ponsetto, the athletic director at DePaul University. Figured kind of in honor of the kickoff of the fall football season, we'll be talking about the upcoming Chicagoland Sports Hall of Fame dinner and induction ceremonies, as well as the status of that new Blue Demons Arena at McCormick Place. After the 8 o'clock news from Dave, we'll be speaking to Greg Bays. Greg is the president and CEO of the Illinois Manufacturers Association, and we'll talk about his speech at the Chicago City Club last week, in which he gave a cry for help for the state's manufacturing economy. And then after the 8:30 news update from Dave, we'll be joined by Republican Congressman Randy Hultgren of Plano. The congressman has been an advocate of combating human trafficking. We're going to learn more about what that issue is and how it's a very big problem here at home. That's all coming up, but first we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in iconic Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue. It's time for our weekly spin through national politics, and what a week it's been. Donald Trump first admits a softened stance on immigration. He makes a surprise visit to Mexico. He meets with that country's president, and Trump himself looks presidential. Then he goes to Phoenix, Arizona, and delivers a speech that showed he was back to his hardline immigration stance.
Number one, are you ready?
Yeah.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
We will build a great wall along the southern border. And Mexico will pay for the wall. Remember. 100%. They don't know it yet, but they're going to pay for the wall.
Now, for her part, Hillary Clinton rejected an invitation to meet with the Mexican president. But in a speech, she said that diplomacy is hard work, requiring consistency and trust, things she says Donald Trump doesn't bring to the table.
You don't build a coalition by insulting our friends or acting like a loose cannon. You do it by putting in the slow, hard work of building relationships. Getting countries working together was my job every day as your Secretary of State. It's more than a photo op. It takes consistency and reliability. Actually, it's just like building personal relationships. People have to get to know that they can count on you, that you won't say one thing one day and something totally different the next. And it certainly takes more than trying to make up for a year of insults and insinuations by dropping in on our neighbors for a few hours and then flying home again. That is not how it works.
Now, part of Trump's attacks on immigration involve the economy. So it seems like it was a natural evolution for Trump to go after Clinton on the economy in his new ad.
In Hillary Clinton's America, the middle class gets crushed. Spending goes up. Taxes go up. Hundreds of thousands of jobs disappear. It's more of the same, but worse. In Donald Trump's America, working families get tax relief. Millions of new jobs created. Wages go up. Small businesses thrive. The American dream achievable. Change that makes America great again. Donald Trump for president.
I'm Donald Trump, and I approve this message.
Now, of course, we also had a Trump surrogate last week declare a warning that Latinos are, in his words, a very aggressive people, and the warning that there'd be a taco truck on every corner. Actually, as a foodie, is that a bad thing? But By the way, Democrats have been winning the presidential commercial air wars, and a new Democratic ad goes after Trump, contrasting diversity versus bigotry.
As an African American,
Mexican American,
Native American,
woman,
Asian American,
Muslim American,
Jew,
person with a disability,
we know bigotry and discrimination when we see it.
They're bringing drugs, they're bringing crime.
You wouldn't have your job if you weren't beautiful.
I don't know what I said. I don't remember.
You're living in poverty. You have no jobs.
Total and complete shutdown of Muslims.
Donald Trump isn't fooling us.
He has shown us who he is, and we believe him.
We know what Trump is doing when he embraces white supremacists.
We've known for a long time what those groups think of people like us.
Pandering to hate groups divides our country and is dangerous to our families and our communities.
We are Americans, and our diversity makes us stronger.
We deserve to be treated equally and respectfully by a person running for president.
Today, we're asking you to have our backs.
Reject Donald Trump and his campaign of hate.
Join us today and commit to vote.
Now, that's one Democratic ad. You also have the groups Emily's List and American Bridge, which are two Clinton-allied groups, going after Trump and his running mate, Mike Pence, the Indiana governor, on women's issues.
Putting a wife to work is a very dangerous thing.
When I come home and dinner's not ready, I go through the roof.
Look, obviously matters. Like you wouldn't have your job if you weren't beautiful.
He suggested women should quit their job if sexually harassed.
Suggesting that the victim is the one who should leave the job.
Pence wrote in which he heavily criticized the Disney movie Mulan and says women in the military is a bad idea.
I mean, you're in there and you're fighting and you're sitting next to a woman. This is really something that is not going to work out.
Mike Pence repeatedly opposing equal pay legislation.
Pregnancy is an inconvenience for a person that is running a business.
Are you willing to hold up this entire budget over defunding Planned Parenthood?
Of course I am.
Roe v. Wade. Do you think it should be overturned?
I do. It can be changed.
Roe must go.
Should the woman be punished for having an abortion?
There has to be some form of punishment.
For the woman?
Yeah, there has to be some form.
So that's the ad from two pro-Clinton groups. Meanwhile, Ohio's Republican Governor John Kasich, a one-time rival to Trump for the GOP presidential nomination, Kasich says for him it's too early to talk about a potential 2020 presidential bid, but he does admit that he's worried about his party in this interview with New Hampshire One.
You know, it's like talking to somebody who just finished a marathon and say, do you want to go and do another one? I don't know. I don't close the door on anything. I think the Republican Party needs redefined. I don't think that the party is living in the 21st century. I think we're still back in the 80s with the same old rhetoric. And look, economic growth is critical, but politics is more about people today than it is about policy. People feel disconnected, lonely. And we need to connect people again. And I think we need to speak to the things that they care passionately about, which to a large degree are very personal things like drug addiction or mental health or the human trafficking or the environment or student debt. I mean, these are all things that hit people, you know, right in the gut. And sometimes they feel like they're out there alone having to deal with all this. And I think that a political party is going to be successful, needs to speak to them. I don't think the Democrats do it any better than the Republicans. So when the election's over, it's going to be a matter, I think, if Donald Trump doesn't win, is what's the redefinition of the Republican Party? What does it stand for? What's the conservative movement all about?
That's Ohio Governor John Kasich. He doesn't necessarily rule out a 2020 bid for the Republican nomination after losing this time to Donald Trump. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Up ahead on The Sunday Spin, we'll be talking about the Chicagoland Sports Hall of Fame and their induction ceremony that's coming up this week.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's The Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio. You know, there's been a lot of talk about whether a third-party candidate for president is viable, given the fact that there's a deep dislike of Hillary Clinton and a deep dislike of Donald Trump. Now, there's Green Party candidate Jill Stein, but Stein left her supporters in Columbus, Ohio, hanging on Friday when she mistakenly flew into Cincinnati instead. Meanwhile, there's Libertarian Gary Johnson, a former governor, A new group is trying to pair up disgruntled Republicans and Democrats to each commit to vote for Johnson so they're not wasting their vote. Now, of course, it's totally unenforceable, but the group uses as its spokesman dead Abraham Lincoln to explain their support for Johnson. Here's dead Abraham Lincoln.
Oh, hey, America. It's me, dead Abe Lincoln. And you just got screwed. Because you have to choose between a corrupt president or a crazy president. Like a two-horse race where one horse cheats and the other one eats Muslims. But don't blame the horses. Blame the two-party system. See, here's your problem. The two big parties gave you zero good choices. There's Hillary, who's like a Monopoly player using her get-out-of-jail-free card, then a rig an election card and make millions on political favors card. And Trump, who's like, if your racist uncle got drunk and ran for president, then the nation got drunk and said, that guy should have nuclear bombs. Now 2/3 of Americans would vote for anyone else, because everything wrong with politics is wrong with Hillary, and everything wrong with the KKK is wrong with Trump, which I know, because he was endorsed by the KKK. Shoot me. But you can't vote third party, because for Republicans, that's a vote for Hillary, and for Democrats, it's a vote for Trump. So you stick with the candidate you don't like to stop the one you hate, splitting the nation in two. But what do I know about that? Look, if America is Gotham City, then Hillary is the mob and Trump is the Joker. The mob's always there. It's corrupt, but at least you know what you're getting. The Joker just got here. He's creating total chaos, and you don't know what he'll do next, but you know it's going to be hell. America, picking between the Joker and the mob is not a real choice. It's time to vote for freaking Batman. Gary Johnson is the only candidate who can beat Trump and Hillary.
That's dead Abraham Lincoln. Finally, Casey Jones was a renowned musical humorist. She was even a contestant on America's Got Talent. Well, Casey passed away last week, and in her honor, I wanted to play a song that she wrote way back in 2009. Now, this was long before Donald Trump was a presidential candidate, but her songwriting is still very reflective today. Here's Casey Jones with Donald Trump's Hair.
Whether a bull or bear market, his tresses are always a target. But this pompadour should be admired. And if you don't agree, then you're fired. Donald Trump's hair, Donald Trump's hair. A girl could get lost in there, way up in there, in Donald Trump's hair. I really don't care if it's full of air. In fact, I really like that word air, H-E-I-R-E-double-S. He's got the bouffant that I want, and I want what I want like Ivana. Spending my hours up in Trump Towers, running my hands through his locks and his safety deposit box. Donald Trump's hair, Donald Trump's hair.
That's the late Casey Jones, and Godspeed to her. Well, you know, given it's this been this big weekend of college football and sports, and I thought it's a holiday weekend, we should kind of mix things up a little bit and take a little break from the politics for at least a brief moment. And so joining me this morning here in the Allstate Showcase studio is Charlie Carey, president of the Chicagoland Sports Hall of Fame, and Gene Lenti-Poncetto, athletic director at DePaul University. Thank you both for joining me this morning. And both, Charlie runs the Chicago Sports Hall of Fame, and pleasure to have both of you here. Gene's on the board of the Sports Hall of Fame. Big event coming up this week.
Yeah, Rick, thanks for having us today. Really appreciate it. Yeah, our big show is September 7th. At McCormick Place. We've changed our venue this year, and we've sold almost, we've sold out. I think we've sold 900 seats. But
amazing.
Yeah. The reception starts at 5:30. The induction ceremony starts at 7. And we've always been very fortunate to have So many great athletes show up for this event, and the event really goes to a charity, Father Smith from the Standing Tall Foundation. Has helped us hold this together for so many years, and he's the one that gave the green light so that we could go looking for other partners and expanding it, and so we have. So, and in addition to scholarships for the underprivileged, the event will support the Chicago Sports Commission, which is run by Carl Bachman, and World Sports Chicago. So Lori Healy, Jeannie have all contributed to what I view as a big move up.
And this is the, if I'm wrong, correct me, it's the 20th?
Yes, this is the 20th induction ceremony that we've had with our partnership with Father Smith.
You know, and you go through the list of names that of past honorees are you know, it's just a tremendous, tremendous acknowledgement of how much sports is so much part of the fabric of the city.
Well, we have a rich history in sports. We've got Northwestern, and a lot of people don't know at one time the Maroons from the University of Chicago were a big part of the Big Ten. And you had Jay Berwanger got the first Heisman Trophy from the University of Chicago, and George Connor, a Southside De La Salle Notre Dame and Chicago Bear, got the first Outland Trophy, which is awarded to the best lineman in college football. So we have a rich, rich history, you know, in addition to all of our great sports teams, our professional teams.
As the Hawks fan that I am, I was happy to see that Mush March was on there as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And this year we're giving an award to Dennis Savard, the Stan Mikita, first ever Stan Mikita Award. Stan was a terrific player for the Hawks, for those great teams in the 60s. So we're excited to have Dennis out. I think Jeannie should talk a little bit about our Ray Meyer Award.
Oh, the Ray Meyer Award is a great honor, you know, bestowed upon Coach Ray for this award to acknowledge his terrific career that he had at DePaul. And this year's honoree is Jay Wright, which is terrific for everybody at DePaul because Jay's in the Big East Conference. He's one of our colleagues and a really good friend. So our coaches are really excited for Jay, and they had such a magical run in the NCAA tournament this year that you can't help but, you know, root for the guy. So we're looking forward to inviting him and welcoming him to Chicago on Wednesday and him receiving the Ray Meyer Award. And it'll continue the legacy of terrific coaches over the years from NCAA championships teams that have won this award.
Well, and Jean, you're a member of the Hall of Fame.
I am, and very honored to be so, Rick. It's a terrific company. I tell Charlie all the time, I'm not sure how I really made that list, but I appreciate being included.
Oh, please. Now, come on. I mean, it's a great honor, and you have had a great career in athletics.
Yeah, I'm really grateful, and it's nice, you know, because I have two brothers that are in it as well. My brother Frank and Eugene are also in it, and Frank's had a great run at Mount Carmel High School, and Eugene's been our softball coach at DePaul and been to four Women's College World Series. But there's so many tremendous names. I mean, it's just a who's who of Chicago sports history that's accomplished so much and added to the fabric of the city of Chicago that gave people a lot to get excited about and cheer for and really create a great sports community in Chicago.
Well, now, your brother, by the way, I mean, he's had a great career. 11 state titles. Yeah. Under his coaching at Mount Carmel.
Yeah, we're really proud of him. But I think if you talk to him, he'd tell you that it's really due to he's been smart enough to keep the same assistant coaches around him for that entire length of time. And as Charlie knows, and you know, Rick, you know, you're in a sport like football where you have so many positions and you know the offensive and defensive schemes that you have to run. You got to have a great staff around you. So I think Frank would give all credit to his staff.
And you got to know change. I mean,
oh, for sure.
It's not going to be the same system that works out all mm-hmm. the time like that. We're speaking with Charlie Carey, president of the Chicagoland Sports Hall of Fame, and Gene Ponsetto, athletic director at DePaul University. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. ...7:48 on this Sunday morning. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio, joined by Charlie Carey, the president of the Chicagoland Sports Hall of Fame, and Gene Ponsetto, athletic director at DePaul University and a member of the board of the Chicagoland Sports Hall of Fame, also a Hall of Famer herself. And we're talking about their 2016 induction ceremony, which comes up Wednesday at McCormick Place. And Charlie, this is a new venue, and I'm kind of curious, how did this work and why?
Well, I've always felt, I've been involved with this Hall of Fame going back to the late 1980s. I think Walter...
That's part of the fighting leatherneck spirit of
well,
in you, right?
Yeah, and my father's teammate at De La Salle High School was George Connor, who held this together along with Father Smith. I have to give a big thank you to these ladies. Jean's been a great director for me, and she introduced me to Lori Healy, Kara Bachman, and they just drove the bus for me. I just got in behind them, and they've made it happen. But this was always kind of my vision to get the Hall of Fame back in the city of Chicago in a venue, and make it really one of the premier events in the city of Chicago.
And obviously, by the fact that it's sold out, there is a great deal of appreciation for it. We discussed a few of the inductees. I was wondering maybe if you could give us the list of some of the others that are going to be inducted into the Hall of Fame on Wednesday.
Well, sure. We start out with we give awards to people that don't necessarily have to have a Chicago tie. The Ray Meyer Award, the NC2A basketball tournament champion, has accepted every time we've offered it to him. We have the Gail Sayers Award, which we had... we've had Earl Campbell. We had Franco Harris last year. This year, it's Jerome Bettis from Notre Dame, and there's a lot of Notre Dame people in the city of Chicago.
Are there? I wonder what they'll be doing tonight.
I'm not sure, but I think they'll be watching a little football or doing something. But anyway, and then this year, the George Connor Award is going to Frank Winters, a fellow Leatherneck, who was Brett Favre's center for the Green Bay Packers for 11 years, those Super Bowl teams in the 90s. And he's probably only the fourth Packer we've allowed in this Hall of Fame. Paul Hornung is one. Frank is one. So Packer fans are welcome for the evening. They can come spend their money and see a truly great Green Bay Packer. In addition, Dennis Savard getting the first ever Stan Mikita Award.
Right.
Everybody knows his body of work. It's been tremendous. And we got Ryan Sandberg for the Cubs. We got Carlton Fisk for the White Sox. We've got a basketball guy that was kind of a contemporary of mine, who Jim Brewer, who played basketball at the University of Proviso East, University of Minnesota with Dave Winfield. But a lot of people don't know, and I had to do my own homework. He actually played 10 years for the Cavaliers, but he got a ring with Magic Johnson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar with the Lakers in his final season.
Wow.
So, yeah, pretty exciting. We got Lance Briggs, one of the best linebackers the Chicago Bears have ever had. So we have Mike O'Neill, a high school coach who coached a lot of guys that ended up going to the NFL, Timmy Grunhard being one of them from St. Lawrence, but he had a big influence over people for all the years. So we've got a great class.
And the Swirsk.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Don't forget the voice.
I wasn't going to forget him. He's the voice of the Bulls. No way.
Yes. I mean, the great Chuck Swirsky, and who's gearing up for the upcoming Bulls season as well. And a good friend of WGN, even though he's now on another network, as they used to say in the old days.
Yeah.
There's a couple of other inductees,
sure,
too, Rick,
Jean,
that I think are really noteworthy, especially as Chicagoans go. And you're right, you talked about Chuck. What a terrific guy. But Don Wilson's also going to get a special recognition as the chairman of Chicago's America Cup World Series. And, Pat Ryan, who chaired up our Olympic bid for the 2016 Games, unfortunately, which we all would have loved to have had here in Chicago. And, our longtime friend who passed away last year, Howie Fagan, that we all,
yes,
will love and miss dearly. And at DePaul, we have an inductee this year, Nadia Edwards, who prepped at Lincoln Way East and was an All-American at Penn State and teammate of Katie Schumacher, who's already in the Hall of Fame. So we got a great list of folks that are terrific Chicago ties that I think people will really be excited to see.
I mean, with all the applause for all these people, this must go all night. I mean, you serve breakfast at this too?
Not with Charlie. It doesn't go all night when Charlie's in charge.
we try to keep the program going so that everybody has a great evening, but it's just nice to be with these types of athletes.
Yes.
And there's a lot of Bo Ellis is coming back, you know, who was a great player at Marquette.
Sure.
And we've got a lot of my friend Tommy Hicks, who played for the Bears, University of Illinois.
A fellow graduate of Willowbrook High School in Villa Park, Illinois.
Oh, I knew he was Willowbrook, but I didn't know you were Willowbrook.
Yes, indeed.
Okay.
Yes, indeed.
All right.
So I got your trivia here for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, you're out dueling me here. I'm overmatched.
Well, and speaking of McCormick Place, where this event's going to be held Wednesday, and Gina, this is partly why I wanted to have you on as well, is, of course, everything that's going on over at McCormick Place, particularly now with the construction of the DePaul Arena over there. Can you give us some progress on what's going on? And
sure. It's moving along terrifically. We're actually a little bit ahead of schedule. You got to give, you know, a lot of credit to, the folks at Clark Construction, because they're just hammering on it. And Moody Nolan's our local architect here in Chicago. So they've done an amazing job. But, you know, this was a vision of Mayor Emanuel and actually Mayor Daley before him, and Father Dennis Holtschneider, our president at DePaul, to come together and create this partnership. DePaul's had partnerships all over the city of Chicago, and pretty much wherever we've laid down roots, those neighborhoods have burgeoned, and it's exciting. McCormick Place is going to get the neighborhood's got a new name, McCormick Square.
It's still going to take me a while to get used to that.
Right.
Yes,
I could appreciate that, Rick, being a longtime Chicagoan. But the facility itself is just going to be a state-of-the-art venue that's going to be multi-purpose. It's going to be a wonderful basketball arena for both our men's and women's basketball teams. But there's been a number of conventions and shows over the years that Chicago has teetered on, either, you know, missing out on a year here and there, or has lost completely because they didn't have a big enough lecture space. You know, Eric Crown seats about 4,000 people, and this space is going to be a really good opportunity for those conventions and shows that are looking for a home for, you know, 8,000 to 10,000 people in a lecture type facility. And then, you know, the rest of the plan is concerts and family shows, and that's a great venue for that size for concerts. And I think Lori's vision is to really bring more sporting events. We've already been on some NCAA events to be hosted in the facility. High school championships, Chicago Catholic League, Chicago Public League championships, high school graduations. DePaul's graduation will also be there, our convocation. So it's going to be a multi-purpose building that's going to get a lot of usage, a lot of dates. DePaul plans to use it for about 27 dates out of the year, and then the city will have it the rest of the time to use for conventions and, like I said, concert shows and other local high school events, most notably. And I think for our young prepsters here in the Chicagoland area to be able to play a state championship game or a high school championship game or just even a regular public league series or Catholic League series, it's going to be a beautiful venue for that. You can't beat the location. Parking's terrific. The amenities in the spaces in terms of locker rooms and everything that goes with it for a student athlete are going to be just off the charts.
And what is the seating going to be for sporting events?
For sporting events, it'll be about 10-4.
Okay.
And I think, for other events, depending on what the setup is, it'll range anywhere from probably 7 to 8,000. And, you know, because if you put a stage at one end,
sure,
it's for a concert, it probably narrows it a little bit to about the 8,000 range, which acoustically is terrific for most concerts and most shows. And so we're excited. We're excited to be part of the partnership with the city of Chicago. Like I said, DePaul's had a long history of contributing to Chicago in that way. And we're glad to be joining that force with McCormick Place folks in the city of Chicago.
And it's injecting a new dynamic into that neighborhood,
too. I don't think there's any question about that. And I think the neighbors have really embraced it. We've spent a lot of time doing community service projects with the children in the neighborhood, especially the Chicago Public Schools. Pat Dowell, we've spent a lot of time with the alderwoman and just, creating a partnership of ways that DePaul can contribute to the fabric of that community with all the different outreach programs that we have educationally in the Chicago Public Schools, most notably. So we've really started to insert ourselves into a neighborhood where we think we've provided a lot of betterment for the community and some terrific opportunities for the children in the community as well.
Well, Gene Pinsetto, athletic director at DePaul University, Charlie Carey, president of the Chicagoland Sports Hall of Fame, thank you so much for joining me this morning on this holiday Labor Day sports football weekend kickoff. Thank you so much for joining me here in the studio.
Thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Rick.
We'll be back with more right after this. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, we'll be speaking with Greg Bays. He's the president and CEO of the Illinois Manufacturers Association. We'll be talking about the issue of Illinois' manufacturing economy and his recent call for help at the City Club of Chicago.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune, here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on Michigan Avenue. Dave Schwann mentioned the fact that out in Naperville, the last fling, the JC's ceremonies going on, the kind of the celebration of the last fling of spring. And I know that Governor Rauner is supposed to be marching in the last fling parade. And I brought to mind in 1999, actually 2000, we had as guests at the last fling were George W. Bush and Dick Cheney. And it was out at the tennis courts at Naperville North High School where then Governor Bush didn't realize that his microphone was open when he used a derogatory term to describe a New York Times reporter that he saw in the crowd, to which Cheney responded, "Big time." And over the years, the then President Bush never apologized to the reporter. He just apologized that everybody heard the remark. So that's my best memory of the last fling parade. So beware of those open microphones, because you never know what can happen. Joining me now on the phone is Greg Bays, and Greg is the president and CEO of the Illinois Manufacturers Association. Greg, thanks so much for joining me this morning.
Rick, how are you today?
I'm very good. I'm very good. A happy Labor Day holiday to you.
Same to you. Your story about President Bush, rather tame of what candidates say about reporters these days.
Well, let's just say that my response to it was that I had some baseball jerseys printed up representing the Major League A's, okay? And we'll just leave it at that.
Right.
Well, Greg, I wanted to have you on because I know you spoke last week to the City Club of Chicago, and I know you kind of called it a wake-up call, but to me it almost sounded like a cry for help about what's going on with Illinois' manufacturing economy. And I know, and we've talked in the past, just a general frustration about manufacturing being a casualty, too, of the lack of certainty when it comes to the state's economy and the state's budget.
Well, it was. It a wake-up call in the speech. I talked about it being a shout from the rooftop for the very, excuse me, very reason that you're talking about, that the jobs are and have been leaving since 2000, that time period of President Bush's remarks. We've lost 304,000 manufacturing jobs in this state. That's a lot of families disrupted. It's a lot of people's future uncertain. The state's fiscal health has certainly deteriorated. And in fact, this morning your own newscast used a commercial brought to you by Indiana, a state that works. You know, when you and I got in this business back in the latter part of the last of the century, you would have laughed at the notion that Indiana was a better place for business in general or manufacturing specifically. And that's what's occurred. And so I did talk about that we do need to be looking at this because it's a destruction of the middle class in this state. It's a destruction of the middle class's future. And without it, the kinds of problems I think that we see in the city of Chicago, in towns like Rock Island or Peoria, will continue to grow because those disappearing manufacturing jobs were the backbone of the middle class in those areas.
How much of those losses, though, represent just kind of the transitioning of the United States into part of the global economy?
It is. There's no doubt that that's a portion of it, that automation, innovation, manufacturers are at their best in figuring out ways to do more, be able to produce more product, be able to compete with other places around the world, in China or Mexico or Southeast Asia. So it's that is a part of it, there is no doubt. But really, the numbers do tell you, though, that we're falling behind, because since the recession of the 08-09 time period, we have seen that other states, Indiana, Ohio, Michigan, all of them are creating manufacturing jobs. I mean, 171,000 jobs have been created in Michigan, almost 80,000 in Ohio. Illinois, 4,900. As I said in my speech, even Idaho had created more manufacturing jobs in the same time period. They created 9,400, a state known for its potato production, for goodness sakes. Illinois has got a lot of systemic problems. You talk about them every Sunday, and those are the kinds of things that are causing manufacturing jobs not to be created here.
Even in citing those figures from other states, though, from 2000, aren't all those states down in numbers of manufacturers?
But not nearly in the numbers that we are down. The numbers are less striking in those states. And everybody went through a very difficult period when the great recession that we had. So what I point out is, why is Illinois not rebounding? Why is Illinois not being able to get back? We have better natural assets than those states. Our location is obviously a great asset. Our ability to get product in and out of this area is a great asset. Our workforce has been a great asset in the past. The ability to train workers for the jobs that we have in the manufacturing sector, but we're not getting them created, and we can get into some of those reasons, but I think the overall direction of this state for the last decade and a half has been very harmful to business in general and manufacturing in particular.
You know, one thing, and we'll talk about what you see as some of the systemic problems, but I had a Republican candidate for Congress on last week who's a businessman and was an emphatic supporter of Donald Trump as a businessman, wanting to bring a businessman's mindset to Washington. But I also pointed out that, you know, after you look at when I talk to most businessmen, is that they want some kind of at least certainty. They may not like the regulations, they may not like the taxes, but at least they know what they're dealing with. And as far as Donald Trump, there's all kinds of uncertainty, but that's kind of what exists in Illinois.
Well, Governor Rauner's the first person to come along in the last decade and a half to say, hey, we've got to change direction. What we're doing is not working. And the governor has outlined solutions that we support. The workers' comp legislation that he's pushing is a good first start. Trying to get our fiscal house in order would be a tremendous start. And also realizing that the $100 billion pension debt that hangs over this state has to be addressed. We clearly have had our state's judicial system tell us that the way that the Constitution is constructed, that the solutions that have not been put forth are past constitutional muster. Well, then two things got to happen. One, we have got to pass a bill that slows down the growth of this monster, because it's now eating up over 20% of our state's general revenue fund. And two, if words that were written in 1970 are causing an inability to be able to change it, then leaders on both sides of the aisle, Democrats and Republicans, should come together and figure out what we must do. Now, you have people listening to this that's going to say, oh, all you want to do are cut benefits and take things away from people. No, that's not what we're saying. What has to be done is, for example, the 3% increase in the state's pension obligation every year is something that is really driving this train right into the ditch. We have got to change that and tie it to Social Security as an example, a CPI increase that would slow down that growth. That's just one of the things that's going to have to be done. But we can't even get to those solutions because of words that were written in 1970. So that's the kind of thing that I think both sides of the aisle have to recognize. We cannot allow it to bankrupt this state.
We're speaking with Greg Bays, the president and CEO of the Illinois Manufacturers Association. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on Michigan Avenue. Joining me on the phone is Greg Bays. He's the president and CEO of the Illinois Manufacturers Association. We're talking about the state of Illinois' manufacturing economy. Greg, you touched on one of the things that the IMA has long supported, and that's changes in workers' compensation. What exactly are you looking for here?
Workers' comp cost in Illinois is the seventh highest in the nation, and the cost of this particular program, which is there to make sure that an injured worker receives the appropriate medical care, and also if the loss of the use of a body part takes place, that they're fairly compensated. We're not by any means advocating a diminishment of that particular goal. The problem has come in is that Illinois has allowed the medical providers of this state to be able to charge higher rates. For example, if a carpal tunnel operation on a Medicare standard will cost about $2,500 to $3,000. And under workers' compensation, that cost, that same operation, rises to $8,000. If you or I have an injury that causes the loss of the use of your arm, as an example, in Illinois, you would be compensated and for that benefit, or to be able to fairly compensate you, would be $460,000. The national average is $168,000. All we're really calling for is that Illinois should come into the median, into the middle with the rest of the nation, to lower those costs. There's probably not one particular issue when a company is making a decision, and they use a lot of them, and it's not the only one, but it is at the top of the list, that workers' compensation costs in Illinois are higher, and therefore a detriment of us being able to either, one, keep a business when it's expanding, or two, to attract a new business to this part of this, to Illinois. It's just a fact, and the people who oppose those changes are those very same people who are feeding off of the system, trial lawyers, medical professionals. Those are the folks that fight it all the time. And we have to be able to come and sit with the leaders of the General Assembly, and we have made some progress in the last few years, look those special interests into their eye and say, look, enough, we have got to bring this into a reasonable area, and that's what we're calling for.
Now, there were changes that I believe were passed in 2011, and Democrats point out that in looking at even reports from the Rauner administration, that insurance rates should be lower for employers than what they actually are, and that part of the problem they see is on the insurance side.
Well, the insurers have to be making sure that they pass along those savings, but the argument falls apart when you have large employers who are self-insured who are not charging themselves over and above what should be paid for, do not see the decreases coming and have not seen the decreases coming along. You must remember a workers' comp injury is anywhere from a 6 to 7 year time period that it may take for that to be adjudicated. And so 2011 to where we are in 2016, we believe that those rates should start reflecting those changes, but we do need to go further. I'm not here to defend insurance companies. If we see or we think that they are not passing those savings along to employers, we'll be standing on the soapbox talking about them as well.
I want to go back to kind of the issue of, you know, what actually is manufacturing today. And, you know, from my generation, I think of the big Caterpillar and the auto companies, those kinds of things, and the evolution to, I guess, advanced manufacturing that mm-hmm. people talk about today. And, you know, here again, it's a generational thing, isn't it?
Well, manufacturing is still an important component of the Illinois economy and the nation's economy. In Illinois, it's about 12.5% of the state's GDP. Frankly, it's about the same percentage as it was 15 years ago. It shows that innovation and technology and the ability of manufacturers to produce more product with less is occurring. But manufacturing, I mean, you read the Chicago Tribune today talking about the young people looking for opportunities to be trained and get into the workforce.
Well, I was going to ask you, how much of this is about, you know, that there may be jobs out there? It's just the lack of training that exists.
There are jobs out there. In fact, the National Association of Manufacturers says that there are 600,000 manufacturing jobs vacant every day because of the lack of a skilled workforce. And it is truly a problem. And the other problem we have going on, Rick, as our generation, the baby boomers, start to retire and are retiring in mass numbers, we in Illinois need to replace 5,000 engineers a year and nearly 30,000 production workers each year just from retirements, let alone from those jobs that are created. So the IMA is working with community colleges and with our lawmakers and looking for programs to how to promote more opportunities, do more training for young people that are not going to matriculate to a normal four-year college situation, and try to follow like the Germans do. Look for more apprenticeship programs. We're sponsoring an apprenticeship program right now, looking for 600 apprentices to place into manufacturing facilities around the state, so the young people can have that opportunity to begin working in the manufacturing facility. You and I remember a time in an era when a lot of folks just came off the farm, came from the cities, and were able to walk up to the front door and be hired. Those days are gone. You have to have the ability to understand the machinery that's in a manufacturing facility. Soft skills need to be taught as well in order to understand that being someplace at 7 o'clock in the morning means 7 a.m. in the morning. You have the ability to work with other people. Those are all things that many of this generation have not been taught and have to be taught to work in the workplace today.
You talk about kind of these programs with community colleges, and, you know, certainly we've heard people talk for years about trying to work with community colleges and stress kind of these partnerships and vocational training. But is it really happening? Because it still seems to be part of the political discourse whenever a presidential candidate goes and visits a community college.
No, it is happening. We have examples all across Illinois in the community college system, working with local employers, working with local high schools, in being able to provide college hours for kids in high school, working with their local manufacturers and what kind of skills are necessary for what we need. Harper Community College, as an example, is doing a fabulous job up in Palatine, along with the Palatine High School, and working with our local manufacturers up there. And those are the kinds of success stories we need to spread, and they are all around the state. There are just not as many of them as there should be.
And a lot of, put this on our plate of priorities here in Illinois.
We've got a lot of them, Rick. There's no doubt about it. In fact, I sort of enjoyed that we haven't talked about the other problems this morning. And let's don't start now.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Greg Bays, President and CEO of the Illinois Manufacturers Association. Greg, thanks so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you, Rick.
We'll be back with more right after this. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, we'll be talking to Congressman Randy Hultgren. The congressman is a Republican U.S. representative from Plano. We'll be talking about the issue of human trafficking, as well as a Town Square Series event at Aurora University that I'll be moderating a panel on a week from Monday on this very topic of human trafficking.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the All-State Showcase Studio and Tribune Tower on Michigan Avenue on this glorious, glorious Sunday. You just can't ask for better weather for this for a holiday. And I'm almost, holiday weekend, I'm almost afraid to talk about it too much because I might jinx things. But certainly get out there and enjoy this weather and enjoy these last flings of summer that we have going on. But certainly a gorgeous day in downtown Chicago today. Well, joining me now on the phone is Congressman Randy Hultgren, Republican representative from Plano. And Congressman Hultgren has been at the forefront of efforts in Congress to combat human trafficking. Congressman, thank you so much for joining me.
Hey, Rick. Good to be with you this morning.
You know, I think as far as when I think of the subject of human trafficking, one, I'm not sure I know what it is. And two, even when you hear about it, you think about it as something going on somewhere else, certainly not in the United States, certainly not in the Chicagoland area.
Yeah, I agree with you. I was the same way. And it's one of these things as you are kind of forced by your own conscience and information to dig into this, you realize it is everywhere. And we are, as a hub with O'Hare for air traffic and international travel, Chicago also is a hub for trafficking, both labor trafficking and sex trafficking. And this is it's a huge, huge industry. It's over $150 billion, they estimate, a global business of trafficking in people. All the experts would say there's more human slaves today than there were when Abraham Lincoln was president during the Civil War. So it's shocking, but the reality is it is happening certainly around the world, but it's also happening right in Chicagoland. And we need to be aware. We need to know what's going on, know how to protect those we care about, but also know what we can do to help those who are caught, who are trapped, who are enslaved. And this thought that I have really to start my involvement in this and my everything I'm committed to is if by our work together, if one person, you know, especially in the sex trafficking, if one girl, young girl or young boy could be spared, could be saved, it's all worth it. Anything that we could do to save that one person is all worth it. I went to school up in Minnesota and had just graduated right after Jacob Wetterling. I actually graduated right before he was captured. I don't know if Chicago folks remember this story 27 years ago, 11-year-old boy out riding his bike with his 10-year-old brother and 11-year-old friend, and a masked gunman knocked them off their bikes, got them all on the ground, told two of them to run away, and grabbed 11-year-old Jacob. He was never seen again. Just yesterday, the news broke that his body was found in a field up in Minnesota. But it was so shocking, but tied back the way that they were led back to Jacob was through child pornography, catching a perpetrator, a sick individual who had binders and binders of child pornography. And through that, they got him to confess. Information still coming out, but they led him to Jacob. So anyhow, just this reminder, we think back a couple years ago with the whole Cleveland horrible tragedy of women being chained in a house in an area that you wouldn't have suspected. So it is happening. It's still a concern. We need to be aware. We need to look and see what we can do. And there are good things that are being done.
Well, as you said, it's a business. I mean,
it is.
And I guess, I mean, there are laws on the books. But why aren't they being enforced?
Well, they are, and where they can. These are, again, people, one of my problems with criminals is they don't follow the law very well. So that's kind of the ongoing challenge is these are people who are preying on those who are maybe vulnerable. We've seen it even now with the internet where I think it's even more so, where there literally are people out there trolling the internet looking for someone who is kind of the profile of young person who is maybe feels alienated from their family or looking to run away, looking to get away. And these people will swoop in, start conversations. We see it happening all the time. We also hear about unbelievable tragedies of family members, maybe a mom or a dad or an uncle or brother or something like that, with offenses that are done against young people, but also even getting to the point of prostituting children. It's hard to wrap my mind around it. It's a horrible subject to have to talk about, but we do have to talk about it. There are kids that are going through this right in Chicagoland area, And we need to help. And there are things we can do to help, but it's a long road for recovery. And so my hope is really just to for all of us to be aware, to wake up to what's going on around us, to be very alert of things that just don't look right. You know, we see it so oftentimes, these massage parlors that spring up, you know, the all the shades pulled, but neon light, and it's in shopping malls. It's in almost every county, many communities throughout Chicagoland. These things spring up. You just wonder what's really going on in there. And I my guess is, and what I've heard is, there's illicit things that are oftentimes happening there, and it's oftentimes people who are there against their will. And we need to be aware of this, and also need to be aware of the process that leads someone into the point where they would want to purchase a child or have access to someone either for labor or for sex. And, you know, this isn't something that someone decides overnight, but it's a process. It's oftentimes pornography that gets more and more and more depraved and dark, leading to prostitution. And if you have prostitution, you absolutely will have child prostitution. The average prostitute starts prostituting or being prostituted when they're 12 to 14 years old. That's statutory rape for 4 to 6 to 8 years, depending on you know, how young these most oftentimes young girls get pulled into this. So we need to be alert. We need to be aware. We need to look constantly at laws of what can we do to make sure that we're going after the real criminals, who are the purchasers, the ones who are trafficking, the pimps. These are the ones that oftentimes get off scot-free, and too oftentimes our laws are going after the prostitutes, which in many cases are really the victims. You know, they had no choice in this when they were 14 years old or 13 years old, and you get pulled into it and see no way of escape.
I know you chaired a briefing on Capitol Hill in March on this subject. What did you learn from that? What was your takeaway from that?
Yeah, I'm part of a group, caucus, a committee called the Tom Lantos Human Rights Committee. Tom Lantos was a member of Congress from California. He was actually grew up as a Hungarian Jew in Budapest and was saved by a Swedish diplomat who was working with America, a guy named Raoul Wallenberg, who saved, they think, over 100,000 Jews from Budapest by creating false documents to get these Jews out of there before Hitler and the Nazis killed them. But Tom Lantos was able to be one of those who was saved, later became a congressman, and really devoted his time in Congress to fighting for victims, people who are, whether it's human rights or religious freedom abuses or trafficking abuses. Anyhow, he's since passed away, but his legacy continues on the Tom Lantos Human Rights Commission. I serve on that commission, and we had a hearing a couple of months ago on human trafficking, and it was specifically on a bill that I introduced, H.R. 611, called the Sex Trafficking Demand Reduction Act. And it's, again, recognizing that the demand for sex trafficking doesn't start out with somebody just saying, you know, one day having to go find someone that I can purchase. Instead, it's a process. It usually starts with pornography that gets more and more and more sickening and dark, and younger children that are part of it. Even that's what we're seeing, I think, with the news breaking in Minnesota. But from the hearing, just had many powerful things that came out of it. We had several people who testified who came out of trafficked situations. And I think the startling reality is a couple things. One, this is continuing to happen here, that prostitution is very often tied to trafficking. Prostitutes very rarely, almost never would have a choice in what they're doing. They are afraid for their lives. They feel like they have no choice and feel like there's no way of escape because of what their pimps are doing, what family members might be doing. And yet we've got to do everything we can to rescue them. And there is hope out of these. A couple of the people who were on the panel with me are recovering from this abuse that they were brought through themselves. And reality is we just don't have enough in place to care for mostly these young girls that are rescued out of these situations, some young boys as well. But in the Chicagoland area, they estimate between 16 and 25,000 young girls and young women are sex trafficked every single year. 16,000 to 25,000. I mean, that's just, I can't even wrap my mind around that. And yet when you look at the number of beds that we have in the Chicagoland area, long-term care, recovery, safe beds, they estimate it's about 25. One of the best places that I've heard about is called Ann's House. And they're in the Chicagoland area, a secret location, but it's a place where girls, young women between the age of 12 and 20 can come there, can be brought there to recover, to get care, to get love, to get treatment, to get counseling, to have mentors, to get back on their feet, to get back into school. And just beautiful, beautiful stories of recovery that's happening there. But it's one at a time. It's multiple years because of the deep, deep, deep damage that has been done. Many counselors and psychologists talk about that what they've gone through is very similar to someone who's in war conditions. You know, the flashbacks, the nightmares continue for years and years and years, and they just need love, they need care, they need help, they need tools to be able to cope out of this. So out of that hearing, heard about some good things that are happening, but also the reality that we're not doing nearly enough, that there's so much more that needs to happen.
We're speaking with Congressman Randy Hultgren, Republican from Plano, Illinois. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Good Sunday morning. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and this is your Sunday Spin. I'm joined on the phone by Randy Hultgren. He's the Republican congressman from Plano, Illinois. We're talking about the issue of human trafficking, and one that, quite frankly, I think, Congressman, you and I both agree, doesn't get that much attention, but is certainly one worthy of great attention. And part of the reason I wanted to have the congressman on is that because on Monday, September 12th at 7:30 p.m., at the Creamy Auditorium at Aurora University, I'll be moderating a panel on this topic. And panelists include James Glasgow, the Will County State's Attorney, Senator Mark Kirk, as well as people who are have the task of trying to treat the victims of this crime. And I know the congressman will also be playing a part in that panel as well. Congressman, you mentioned before the break about this Sex Trafficking Demand Reduction Act. And what actually would that do that current law doesn't do?
Yeah, the biggest thing it does is it's really focused more on the international crisis, and it's recognizing the tie between human trafficking and prostitution. One of the best acts that has ever passed Congress was an act called the Trafficking in Persons Act. It was passed in the early 2000s. What it does is annually does a study and report of nations that we have relationships with around the world to analyze how they're doing to combat trafficking in persons. It's great. It's really effective. There's direct pressure on these countries to act responsibly and to deal with this problem. What has happened in the past was they would just kind of brush it under the rug and ignore it. With the Trafficking in Persons Act, they can no longer do that. And there really is some significant peer pressure among countries to act properly and to deal with this. One of the areas that hasn't been recognized, though, in the Trafficking in Persons Act is how closely tied prostitution is to trafficking, that if you've got prostitution and have governments that kind of do the wink and the nod, either accept it or basically just allow it to happen. If you have prostitution, you're going to have child prostitution, guaranteed. And if you're going to have prostitution and child prostitution, you're going to have trafficking of human beings. And we need to make this tie, and we have to have it be part, I believe, part of our Trafficking in Persons Act to look at how our country is doing in combating this. Two examples real quickly. Sweden had a real problem in human trafficking and in prostitution. 10 or 15 years ago, they took a dramatic turnaround to go after, rather than trying to catch and imprison prostitutes, what they're trying to do is bring help to prostitutes, but really go after the purchasers, the pimps, the traffickers, the men who are going out and buying sex. And putting much higher penalties and also higher stigma of letting people know in the community who's doing this so that we can be aware of it and put some pressure, again, for people to know that they can't get away with this, that this is going to be punished. And they've seen a dramatic reduction in Sweden over the last 10 years in prostitution, but also in human trafficking. Flip over to another country that's a good friend of ours, Spain. I like Spain, a lot of things I like about them, but right now their government is basically winking and nodding at prostitution. There's websites out there talking about the largest brothel in all of Europe being in Spain. It's huge numbers, like over, you know, a third of the men in Spain say that in the last year they purchased sex. I mean, it's just a crazy number. And we see this huge volume of people being trafficked in and out of Spain. And so there's a place where we can, you know, again, I like Spain. I want them to do well, but I also want to hold them accountable when they're not taking something seriously that is hurting people, hurting children. We need to talk about it. And so that's really what my bill would do is recognize that they shouldn't be recognized as basically a tier one fighter of human trafficking if they're allowing and in some ways I would say almost encouraging prostitution to be occurring in their country. So that's what my bill would do. There's many other good things out there that we've done. It's one little step, but you know, a lot of little steps can make a difference for that one person. And I just want to thank you too for hosting and moderating the event on coming up on the 12th of September at Aurora University, 7:30 at night. Going to be a really good, important event. And there are things we can do. You know, we can be more aware of what's going on around us, be watching for things that just raise questions, and be looking for ways to protect people in our neighborhoods. Ultimately, Rick, you know, both you and I are dads. Both of us have daughters. I just am passionate, shaken with the reality that ultimately this is a men's issue. That it's by and large 99.9% of those who are purchasing this are men, and we need to live up to being leaders in our families, leaders in our homes, protectors of our daughters, whether they're actually our daughters or America's daughters or the world's daughters.
They're someone's daughters.
Absolutely, and we need to step up and say this is unacceptable. This isn't a victimless crime. These are real victims that literally are being used up and thrown away, and we can't stand by and let that happen. If someone who's listening, you know, is caught, and I see it as caught in whether it's purchasing sex and purchasing prostitution or even getting into deeper and deeper, more dangerous pornography, get help. There are good things to break away from this. And again, recognizing that every single one of these things has a victim. There is a real daughter on the other side of this or a real son on the other side of this that most likely is there against their will. That's what we're seeing so often. And then come to things like the thing that Aurora University, learn about this, understand what's going on. I'm so proud of a lot of our young people, and I truly believe in our kids' generation, if they were to stick with this and we were to work with them, we could see an end to of human slavery. And what an incredible thing that could be. But it's going to have to happen one person at a time, one commitment at a time.
Two takeaways here. One, if you see something suspicious, you can call the National Trafficking Hotline. That's at 1-888-373-7888. That number again, 1-888-373-7888. Also, for more information on this panel that we'll be having in the Town Square series at Aurora University, you can get more information about this free event at AU Arts and Ideas, all together, auartsandideas.com. Congressman Hultgren, thank you so much for joining me this morning on the Sunday Spin.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks for doing this. And I encourage people to look up Ann's House with Salvation Army and support that as well. It's a great, great place that's actually making a difference. But thank you for your involvement and being the moderator coming up on the 12th.
Thank you as well. Have a great Labor Day weekend.
Thank you.
We'll be back with more right after this. Well, that's all we have time for on this week's edition of the Sunday Spin. I want to thank my guests, Charlie Carey and Gene Ponsetto, both of the Chicagoland Sports Hall of Fame, Greg Bays from the Manufacturers Association, and Congressman Randy Hulkman. Most of all, I want to thank all of you for listening on this glorious Sunday. You couldn't ask for a better weekend, Dean Richards.
Perfect day today.
Just fantastic. Yesterday was gorgeous.
Tomorrow's going to be perfect.
And then it's going to get hot.
And then it's going to snow.
No, it's going to get hot.
That's right.
Sorry, everybody wants to give away the summer
I'm
so
fast
quickly.
Forwarding a little bit. I'm sorry.
My fingernails are clutching the.
Yeah, I don't want to get rid of it either, but.
Especially when it's like this.
No, it's you couldn't ask for a better holiday weekend, especially. And the hot weather, I don't mind the hot weather. It's fine with me.
It is what it is for a few days.
It is what it is. Enjoy it. It's going to snow soon enough.
What do you got in the grill today?
What am I grilling today? You know, I saw you grilling.
I
was
last
grilling up
a
storm on the
yeah.
TV this week. We'll talk about some of that stuff. But today, I'm actually going to a relative's house. They asked me to man the grill today. I'm not sure what we're grilling.
It's a chef's surprise.
It's going to be chef's surprise. So.
But in a good way, because you're doing it.
You know, grilled bologna can be very delicious.
Every once in a while, I get a hankering for that.
My dad used to make fried bologna sandwiches all the time.
Yeah, you know
what? Fried bologna and fried spam sandwiches all the time.
Actually, that's the only way I could ever eat spam, is to kind of grill it.
It's quite delicious. Spam is quite delicious. Do you know, I was in Hawaii earlier this year.
That is spam heaven
out
there.
You go anywhere, you go to McDonald's and you get spam. At McDonald's there.
The service community, the military community, that's who brought it there.
Very big on... Doesn't SPAM stand for something?
No.
I thought it was an acronym for something that... Now that I'm saying it, it might be some words that we're not allowed to say. Now that I'm thinking about it, probably shouldn't have brought
that
up.
It's certainly keeping Hormel in business.
Wonder what
though,
the S
you know?
Could stand for.
Yeah.
What could
spiced ham? Dean.
Spice. That's the word that I'm spiced. Sure that we're all thinking about.
Thank you. Thanks, Sam. Thank you for rescuing us.
Sam, spam. Come on.
Enjoy. It couldn't be anything else.